Hello and welcome to KPCA LP in Petaluma, California. My name is Ray Cooper and I'll be your host today for the show Food is Energy. And I'm really excited to have our guest in today. And so we have Jack Gesheit. We're going to be bringing him on in a minute. It's February 4th, 2019. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about the show in a minute. But I think what I'm going to bring up a couple of current event comments, like the Super Bowl. Now, the Super Bowl just happened yesterday, and it was pretty boring, I guess. And so it was something to watch, but now we're all bored now because it's over. But what I wanted to mention was that the quarterback that won was Tom Brady from the Patriots, and he's vegan. And you know, I think that's six Super Bowls he's won now. He's been in nine Super Bowls, and he's won six. Now, if this show was a vegan infomercial, I could just say, be vegan and you could be the winningest quarterback in the world. But I'm not going to say that because this show is not a vegan infomercial. I want to preface that. I want to run a couple of disclaimers. I don't want to scare anybody off. And we talk about facts. And one of the things I also want to say is, as we get into this later on in the show, we're going to be talking about a little bit about cattle ranching, and you know, there's some things going on at Point Reyes, and I want to say that, you know, we're bringing some of these issues into question, but we don't really want to throw this out there and not provide alternatives for people, the cattle ranchers and everything. We want everybody to thrive and move forward based on the facts, and we don't really want to put anybody out of business or criticize anybody. It's kind of like a little feature I'm going to bring up later in the show, the old way and the new way. And the new way may not involve animals that aren't native as a way to make money on national park lands. That's what I think. I would think the new way is going to be different. So anyway, also before we get started, I'd like to say hello to Sue and Kara, who hopefully are out there listening. We really appreciate it. Thank you for listening to the show, you two. And so Tom Brady's a vegan, the New England Patriots. I love that. And also, actually, I want to throw this out there too. The record holder for the Pacific Crest Trail, vegan. Just thought I'd mention that. What's this show about? Well, you know, it's about the products that you consume. You know, I mean, really, and how they have impacts on others. And this is all products, but obviously an area of concern is food. That's the biggest one. And we might say, well, we don't have a lot of power. You know, we don't run companies. We don't have a lot of money. Well, you do have the power. You know, there's a lot of power. Everybody that can actually buy a $10 thing of cheese or non-dairy cheese, that's where it all happens. That $10 purchase, the magic happens right there. So you do have the power. And I want to mention another couple things real quick before I bring in our guest. There's a conscious eating conference at the David Brower Center on March 2nd, 2019, 2150 Alston Way, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. I highly recommend that. There's a person that's going to be giving a presentation there named Joanne Farb, and she's going to be on my show next week. And Joanne Farb used to work in the pharmaceutical industry, and she's an expert on all the health benefits of a vegan diet. And she's just awesome. She's from Kansas, and she's rarely out here on the West Coast. And I highly recommend that you take a look at that. Your life will guaranteed be changed if you go to that conscious eating conference. And then there's the Animal Film Festival next weekend at Grass Valley. Now, this is films about animals. It's been going, I think, 7 years, February 9th and 10th in Grass Valley. You could Google that and check it out. Our guest today is an expert on trees. He knows everything. He's not so much the species, but he knows about trees in general, which is actually, to me, more important. He's the founder of treespiritproject.com. He's an accomplished nature photographer and environmentalist. Please welcome Jack Gesheit.
Hello, Ray.
He's going real slow to get started. Gentlemen, start your engines.
I dropped a lewd before the show. I hope that's okay. And yes, I'm joking.
That's great. Don't try this at home, ladies, kiddies.
Well, Ray and I, you you and I can get worked up, really excited, and start shooting ideas around so quickly that anybody listening will be frightened and run away.
That's right. But, maybe some of them can run with us, but we get excited. Let's put it this way. We're ambitious. We're enthusiastic. That's not a crime. But we're trying to put out information here, so we don't want to overwhelm people. But, Jack, thank you for being on Food is Energy. I really appreciate it. You know, I told you earlier today, you can come on the show anytime you want, and you can write your own ticket, too. Unless you mess with me. Then you can't.
I appreciate your having me, Ray. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
As we say in New York, it's nice to be had.
Well, that brings me to my next thing. I'm going to throw this out there. And we're opting to put more out about your message than about you. But I do want to give the listeners a little bit, about you. You're originally from New York City, and your parents were professional photographers. And the whole family, I guess, has an eye for art and creativity in New York City. And you take it from there as far as...
Well, my father came from a family of artists, to be sure. He had a brother and a sister. He has a brother and a sister. His brother, actually, Uncle Stuart, to me, is a wonderful human being, who was a World War II bomber pilot who knew the profession he wanted to pursue when he got out of the service on the GI Bill, and that was to be a professional modern dancer with the Martha Graham Company, which he did for his career, and then went on to teach modern dance. And just because it amuses me, I guess because of my own stereotyping, perhaps, out of the audience, but he was also straight. So imagine the percentage of that. Just so unlikely.
I wanted to stay politically correct, but, I mean, that's a long time ago. And guys were really not into being dancers back then, Jack.
Indeed. And then on my mother's side of the family, she was the black sheep of the family who did not come from a family of artists. So it was my fate to be born to two different but both professional photographer parents. And go figure. And then find my own way, which was... You know, what kind of photography do I want to do? And I didn't turn to photography professionally until I was 27. I was already a writer for an agency and tried another career and keep coming back to photography in one way or another. But eventually it morphed into what I'm doing now, which I call the Tree Spirit Project.
Yeah, and that's you're right in the middle of where you're going to be headed. I think it's yet to be seen where this is going to end up. But I think you've got so many elements that are coming together here, Jack. Now, let me just throw out a couple things. I have spent so much time in the wilderness, and you affirmed a lot of things for me about why it's great to be around trees. And that's really at the heart of this whole thing is, like, it is such a good feeling to be out in nature, and that people aren't doing that as much now. And some people may not know what that's like, but I was doing that, but I didn't even realize that it was happening, you know, how much I had enjoyed it and why it was that way. But I had property when I was younger and with all these ponderosa pines. And I just want to describe something to you. Taking a nap in the pine needles. Have you done that? Because they're the softest thing you could ever see. And the best time is when they've been wet and they started to get dry. The sun's baking them. And it's almost so pungent, the smell of pine. And then you lay down and the bugs aren't bothering you. And you just take a nap, and it's the coolest thing ever.
It's funny you mentioned pine needles specifically, or pine trees. I was just reading an article 2 days ago about why do trees smell so good, and the article was specifically why pine trees smell so good to us. And, of course, I'm always amused at the science, and I'm a big believer in science, especially these days. But to quote a Seinfeld line, you know, if you go tugging on that thread, you know, the science of why, the whole universe will come unraveled, which is to say you'll auger into the universe of the inexplicable and the, or as a little kid would say, well, why do pine trees smell good? Well, it's because of the terpenes. Oh, okay. Why is terpenes smell so good? Well, it's because of the molecules and the way they affect the pleasure center of his brain. Well, why do those affect the pleasure center? And, you know, it just, there's never ending. There is no ultimate why. It's a continuing game of why, mm-hmm. which is fine. And then at some point, I mean, I'm flattered that you would call me an expert on trees. I do not consider myself that. Probably my strongest suit, the thing that I would lay claim to, is I'm a passionate lover of trees, and I want to express my affection for, my love for trees, my affinity for being near them and in forest in any and every way I can, in every tool at my disposal.
Right. So, you're not specific like the scientific names of all the trees and all that nerdy stuff.
Bill Nye the Science Guy, but I really appreciate Bill Nye the Science Guy and we need science and need scientists. It's absolutely essential.
I hear he's going vegan, actually.
I didn't know that.
He's on his way because he's into the facts. So the facts will lead you to veganism. I hate to say it.
The only reason to not be vegan really is you, like me, for 50 years, were raised on meat, love the taste of meat, don't really think about where it comes from, which can be very upsetting when you kind of pull the cover off that one. So, yeah, of course, you'd move in that direction. You don't, as I am constantly advocating, and as you and I have discussed, you don't need to quit all meat. I mean, if you can, fine, if you decide you want to do that for reasons of, well, for many reasons to get educated, but just to reduce your consumption of red meat is a very smart thing to do for many, many reasons.
I think everybody agrees on reduction, but obviously the ultimate in reduction would be to not do it at all, would be, you know, the ultimate, you know, but people aren't ready for that.
There you go again with your extremism, you activists.
Not to get into the vegan infomercial, but, you know, the thing about it is, you know, the old way and the new way. The new way is not going to involve animals. That's such a burden.
But don't you think, Ray, it's a good way to just vary the protein in your diet?
Well,
take the bait. Go ahead.
No, I'm saying that there's plenty of great things in the vegan world that you're talking about, because you're talking about these guys that want the taste. You know, they want the good textures and all that. They don't realize it's there. That's where I like to say I'm not here to be a vegan propagandist. What I'm doing is opening the door for people that don't know that there's great things waiting for them. That's what I'm doing. I'm just a guy standing at the gate, opening the door, say, hey, come on in. And I want to make sure that door is open, because there's people that are paid money to keep that door closed, Jack.
Before I got to photography as a profession, I was 6 years as an advertising copywriter for J. Walter Thompson, I'm a keen awareness, pretty keen awareness of the power of advertising and public relations and how it affects what we think and what we consume intellectually and emotionally.
Right. And then the catchwords and the buzz, you know, the inflammatory terms that are used. And this is on both sides, too. This is people that are so passionate about trying to get something done, they're willing to go below the belt. And it's happened on the vegan side, too. And that's why I want to do this show, because I want to bring in, this is public radio, nobody's getting paid. We're gonna get to the bottom of this. If somebody has a problem with a certain term or something that's being said, we're gonna get to the bottom of it eventually. I don't care if it's 3 years from now I do a show on it. Whenever there's a conflict, we're gonna expose it here.
Let's get after it, as Chris Cuomo says.
In your talk, why loving trees will save our souls and our asses. Hope it was okay to say that.
It's okay with me.
You pretty much outline the fact that the solution to all major issues facing us is plants, and especially trees, correct?
I would say planting plants, but largely trees, because they're the largest plant, largest vegetable technically, and then also consuming plants much more than we do.
Right.
Yeah, that will mitigate many of the effects, not completely. God knows we need to do many more things, like convert from fossil fuels to renewable energy and such, and obviously change our transportation habits as well. But planting more trees and consuming more plants and fewer animal and animal products is a huge step toward mitigating climate. It's funny. I thought these conclusions would come toward the end of this show, but here they are coming up right in the beginning, which is to say you don't have to quit meat and go 100%, but it's the easiest individual choice we can make, which has a tremendous impact. More so than buying a Prius, getting out of your gas guzzler, which is a good thing to do. More so than carpooling, which is a good thing to do. More so than taking shorter showers, which is certainly a good thing to do. But just what you eat is a tremendous impact. And we're going to go to that.
We're going to get into it. And the thing is, it's okay to make the statement early on, because we're going to back it up.
Right.
Because I've got them listed down here, and that almost every one of them could be a show, basically.
Yeah.
But I've got, you know how many letters are in the alphabet? I almost used up every letter in the alphabet just on the drawbacks or the hazards of animal agriculture. So, yeah.
50, you know, by the way, I think, isn't it?
Well, I've got up to...
50 letters in the alphabet if you include Alaska and Canada, the other state.
The alphabet. I got up to P, Jack. I got up to P, and then that was it.
Perfect.
I had to go to the bathroom. No, just kidding.
So what I would like to come back around to, if I might, although I'm not hosting the show, I know.
It's your thing.
Right? Well, you asked about lying down, about why you love, or perhaps touching on why you love lying down in a pine forest and the smell of pine needles. And for me, it comes back to my lifelong attraction since I was a little kid growing up in New York City and then New York State, and what I call contrast bathing, driving back and forth, because my father was a city guy who kept us anchored to my first home was a Manhattan apartment, 31st Street and Lexington Avenue. And my mother, although she was also, like my father, born in Brooklyn, inexplicably loved nature.
Mm-hmm.
She was the first person, she pushed to get us, me and my brother and our nuclear family of four, out of the city up to the country, upstate New York. So we drove back and forth weekends and summers to Westchester County, Putnam County, and Dutchess County, which were then in the 60s quite more rural than they are today. And I really just emotionally felt such a difference driving in our little 1964 Volvo station wagon. It was the size of a very small Subaru from the year 2000 then. Drove out to the country, and the air was fresh, and the concrete fell away, and the heat and the soot of then, you know, coal-ridden New York City fell away, and I just felt more alive and more energized and just in love with all of it, this open sky and the sunshine and the clouds and the grasshoppers and the fireflies and, of course, the trees, which are teeming with insect life and bird life and animal life. And I, you know, I wouldn't talk about it the way I talk about it now, but I felt it. I mean, the memories are so strong. And I, whenever I speak about this, I always hope that people listening are led back to their own childhood memories, or in your case, an adult memory of, yeah, Jack, I really do love lying down in this smelling pine needles when I lie in them. Why is that?
It's that. Well, I wanted to offer a theory, which I think you've just touched on, and there's a reason for that. It's a natural reason, and the pine makes us feel good. And those are great experiences that are awaiting people, and it comes from trees. They put out some sort of smell, and it's the creator or whoever you want to say that the natural order of things has done this. And I totally get that it's real, and it took you to, like, focus on it to really say, yeah, this is really happening.
It took me to focus on it for it to call more attention for you, you're saying?
Yeah, well, I did it right away, but I knew it was happening but subconsciously, but then you said, you know, it's the trees and it, you know, something's happening there that's actually a chemical or physiological reality that's part of this whole thing.
I think it's chemical, physiological, scientific, emotional,
right,
metaphysical,
spiritual,
absolutely. I mean, it's all of these things combined. It's not one or the other. And we're all wired differently. We're all unique humans. We all have these components to varying degrees. And it's wherever you focus, you will grow that area in your consciousness. You'll pay more attention.
And the reason I think it's good that we focus on this, because although we're going to get into some of the bad things that are happening in some of the old ways, there's great news that these plants are going to save us, because they've been saving us and they've been here the whole time. They're the whole reason we're thriving on this planet, is the plant life. That's what we're going to tap into, and that's what's going to save us.
They are one of the main reasons we are thriving and surviving and thriving on this planet. And I also would argue, as a former copywriter, I agonized over that headline for my talk, which is Loving Trees Will Save Our Souls and Our, and am I allowed to use that word on public radio? And our butts, I'll say it that way.
Well, it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission, right?
Well, yeah. Gosh knows,
we're,
I'm trying
we're
to break
not,
that
We're not profane.
But anyway, so it's both the, that title breaks down to save our souls and our butts.
Save our donkeys.
Yeah. But the emotional, but let me start with the environmental part, which is, you know, the trees are evolutionarily perfected, among other things, carbon sequestration devices.
Right.
So if we're looking to remove atmospheric carbon, plant more trees. We don't have to invent the wheel.
Well, that's the thing. Somebody invented this machine that takes carbon out of the air, and it's like, hey, wait a second, there's a tree.
God or nature or evolution, whichever you prefer, or all of the above, and they were here. But let's put it this way. Homo sapiens are here approximately, roughly, scientists argue always, about 200,000 years, humankind on this planet. Trees have been here about 350 million years.
Yeah.
So their being on this planet made our evolution possible.
Yeah.
Maybe somehow our DNA is wired to be conversant with that of trees? Or we depend on them for their, of course, oxygen production?
They were there from the very beginning, but they also, if you think about redwood trees being 4,000 or 5,000 years old, you know, that's
an individual
nothing.
Tree, you mean?
Well, yeah, a tree, yeah. But okay. How
two or 3,000 maybe.
I wonder how long the actual redwood trees have been in California. There was a time when they weren't here.
Redwood trees, I it's funny, again,
they're prehistoric.
You embarrass me as calling me an expert. I'm knowledgeable, but there's so much more to know. I know they're an ancient tree, and I think they could 200 million years is what I have, but I would not say that with certainty. And I have an internet in front of me, I can go search it, but I'd rather not.
Well, do it if you get a chance. When I get on one of my rolls, you can do it.
Okay.
So if you just tuned in, you're listening to KPCA LP in Petaluma, California. We've got Jack Gesheit from the Tree Spirit Project, which I highly recommend you looking into that. And the show is called Food is Energy. So I want to take this moment to do a little thing that I made up, and it's called The Old Way and the New Way. And it's kind of like the Bill Maher thing of the new rules, but not as funny. And so let me just roll right through that, and then, Jack, you can make your comments if you want on that. Okay, so old way, new way. Old way, we smoke cigarettes in courtrooms and on planes without any regard for others. And the new way, we don't allow people to smoke indoors because it affects the health of those nearby. The old way, we looked at trees as a resource, so we cut them down. A new way, we look at trees as a resource, so we plant them. The old way, we looked at certain humans as a resource to be exploited. The new way, we look at humans as contributors, so they are nurtured, respected, and allowed to thrive while making their unique contributions. The old way, we based our system on a need for domesticated animals for food, with one human needing between 20 and 100 animals per year to survive, every year. The new way, we finally realized that we can thrive on plants without involving any animals at all, thus saving billions with a B, billions of lives, both animal and human. And my statement is this: being a parent is great, but being a great ancestor is better. What do you think about that, Jack?
I'm trying to digest that.
What about being a great ancestor? Who thinks about that? I think about that kind of stuff.
Right, thinking generations ahead.
Yeah, that's
for what's
right.
Going behind.
500 years. Yeah. Think, you know, outside the box.
Well,
you know,
and in your case, you don't have children, correct?
I have a son.
You do.
Yeah,
I've not met him.
Do you have any children?
I do not have kids.
But
yeah.
Would you plant a tree for someone after you're gone? Would you do that? Would that mean anything to you?
Planting trees is always a good thing to do, whether you have children
or not.
But
if it benefited somebody after you were gone, would that matter to you?
Well, certainly. I mean, it's why I'm an activist.
It's still a benefit.
What is my purpose in life if not to make the place better, a better
right.
place for my having been here?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm driven by that. Like, why am I here? What's my purpose?
It's not about having your name on a plaque on a tree somewhere. It's about that tree being a benefit to someone you'll never even know, but you know it's great. That should be a motivator, because that's a selfless thing, Jack.
There's an aphorism, I can't quote it exactly, but it's someone is truly caring about fellow humans when they plant a tree under whose shade you know you will never sit.
Right, right. Or a fruit tree that's going to bear fruit for someone you'll never meet. That's the way people need to be thinking. And if they do...
Yeah.
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 Well,
tell them.
This is my opinion. I don't want to push it on any. This is not an infomercial.
Hello, horse. You're high up there.
I'm just giving some ideas to people here, Jack. Some motivators, right? And maybe it's not for everyone. Some people are, you know, again, the veganism in my mind, you know, one of the reasons I like about it is it's not about you. And, you know, the reality of the world is it's pretty much not about you. You have to survive, and you have to look out for yourself.
You know, we talk about this a lot, obviously, Ray, but I don't think you... An argument can be made for not even having to be an advocate for veganism. Just explain what's currently going on in the current system and have people understand it. As I just quoted this recently, I think it was Paul McCartney, at least, who's attributed with saying... If slaughterhouses had glass walls, everyone would be a vegetarian.
Right.
People are, that's back to my advertising industry, a comment I was trying to make earlier. The truth of the brutality, the basically animal slavery of billions of large animals kept in confinement and out of sight and treated very poorly, is a gentle way of saying it.
Mm-hmm.
That those facts are hidden from people, because if they knew, it would be very, very upsetting.
Well,
and that's how 98% of the meat in this country is produced.
Well, and it's actually my point, too, because my point is that about you? No, that's about animals. And so you have to get outside yourself. Like, look at your thing. Let's just try it on what you do, okay? Your main thrust, your statement, I think, is really what is a very selfless statement that you make, is about trees, you know? And that's not about you. If it was about you, it would be something different.
You're probably right, but I was raised with a big ego in a big ego city, New York, so it's hard for me to get out of the picture. The best I can do is share the picture with the bigger perspective as well. It's my voice. It's coming through me.
It has your stamp on it, Jack, and it could be a statement about, you know, your statement, you know, a monument to your good taste if you want. But it's not about you.
I'm happy when I light up other people with their own passion. And then I know I've touched on something by looking within me, Jack, touched on something universal. Your own passion for trees comes alive when Jack talks about trees, perhaps.
It's okay if the motivation for you to help other people is about you. In other words, you get gratification. That has to be there, or you're not going to do it. There's always something in it for you.
I think that's true. I mean, I think that's ego-driven, and that's fine. It's funny. California,
okay.
We even have discussions about ego in California, right? Back where I come from, I was like, what are you talking about? I'm trying to earn a living. Get out of my way. I want more.
Yeah, I know.
And then when I talk about my hometown, you hear how my cadence picks up automatically.
But see, you know what, Jack? That means all the more, though, because you had to come a little bit farther. You weren't raised in this self-aware, you know, California land that we live in, where a lot of the rest of the world takes their cue from, too, by the way, Jack, because as 7 billion people try to survive, it can't be about them. It has to be about the collective. And you can do that in small communities. Okay, great. We'll do it as a collective. We'll work together, help this out. We don't need maybe the government in Washington telling us what to do. We already know what's best for us in this little community.
When the people lead, our leaders will follow, says the bumper sticker.
Exactly. And
I wanted to go back to forest love, if I might.
Sure, anytime. Jump right in.
Okay, because that was the other half of the talk about kind of my core talk I give. I just gave it at a forestry conference in Southern California for the Arbor Day Foundation, and it's why loving trees will, you know, save, quote-unquote, save the planet. The planet's going to do fine, but it'll continue to make it habitable for us humans, which would be a really nifty, convenient thing. But the other part is that's the bigger picture, what we need to be doing in the next decade, especially with global warming being the reality it is and our human activity being the primary driver of it. But the good news is in doing things that are good for the planet in the long run, which is at this point a decade, it's not a very long, long run. Just going out every day, you and I were outside today at lunch before the show, and just seeing trees, being around trees, whether it's one tree or two little trees planted in a parking lot, or if you have the luxury of being near a forest or a stand of trees or the woods and walking among them, makes most people, the vast majority of people, not all people, but the vast majority of people, feel better in the moment. So your day today, listeners who are listening to this, whether it's live or in a tape, you know probably that if you take a walk at lunchtime today or after work or before work with a friend, yourself, with your dog, whatever it is, among trees, you will feel better. You'll be glad you did. You can even come back to your job if you need to do that, or your second job, and work and be more productive and do all that industrious stuff, but you will be happy now immediately, not later when you get the thing that will then make you happy just by being around trees. That is the gift that trees give us every day, just being around them, just being near them. Instantly, we feel better.
That is exactly what's unique and different about your statement, that you're focusing on trees as a resource and a way to save our donkeys. And,
our souls. I mean, make us happy.
Just what you just said, I deserve a pay raise for getting you on this show. For getting you on this show. I deserve a promotion and a Christmas bonus. Start saving up right now. Because that is exactly what is different and awesome about what you have to say, is that the trees, out of all the plants, actually, are already there to listen. I'll give you a little fun fact that I just thought of, and you tell me if this is not true. A person can plant more trees in one day than a person can cut down. What do you think about that? I can plant a lot of trees in a day, Jack.
I want that to be true. I was always taught it's easier to destroy than it is to create, as a motivating statement to realize, be careful what you harm, and you can create a lot if you wish, and you'll feel better for having done so. And the knowledge of having done so.
You know, if we made someone plant 100 trees for everyone they cut
force them, chain them to that tree, make them plant.
We'll crack the whip on them. No, it's like, we could have it as a strong suggestion. In fact, hey, you want to cut down a tree? Plant 100 trees. 200 trees to cut one down.
I moved to California and read some East Indian sage teacher named Krishnamurti, and he taught me that is just, and I know you're kidding, but I got to speak it. It comes to me. It's just more violence. Coercing people, getting people. I know you're joking, but I even say you want to open them up with love, with passion, with, wow, I really do like trees. And I'm going to go plant some more bulbs in my garden or volunteer with the local Sierra Club, whatever it is, rather than pulling out, by the way, so-called invasive species and all, which is another topic.
Right.
But just do something positive that makes you feel good and opens your heart. And then you've done your job, Ray, by talking to people on the radio about what's passion for you. It will awaken other people's passion. There's no coercion involved. That's just more violence. Gentle violence, to be sure, but it's violence.
I know what you're saying, and that's like an edict. It's like a law. You know, it's like, you can't do this unless you do this. And I see what you're saying, and I didn't mean it that way, but
I know.
It would be nice if they did it voluntarily. Like, say, I want to cut down a tree, but I'm very aware, so I'm gonna plant 100 trees. And that's almost a great way to say, hey, go ahead and take a tree, but you're offsetting your carbon footprint by doing that. You know, and that to me would be a great thing.
Let's say do both. Don't cut down the tree unless it's absolutely essential. And we cut down far too many trees unnecessarily. We can be using far fewer. I mean, we're going to be continuing. I'm realistic. I'm nothing if not a pragmatist. We will cut down trees continually now as we use a lot of their materials for building and such, but we can be using far fewer. And that's where the technology and intelligence and discernment comes in about using more recycled paper and more tree-free products, as they're called now in the industry. We don't need to be using trees to wipe our donkeys, as we're calling it in the show. It's just, that's ridiculous.
And let's look at it from a all about me standpoint, where if you were to cut down trees, that benefits a relative few, as opposed to planting trees, which benefits much, much more. So again, it gets back into more of the collective. If you're going to make an effort, let's do something that benefits more people rather than less. That's the old way as opposed to the new way. Look at Scotland. When we talked about Scotland before, I went to Scotland and England. There's not a lot of trees there.
No.
They didn't have any ecological idealism back then, and they just ran it all the way down to no trees.
My partner, Cara, with whom she's a shaman, don't you know, trained in the Celtic tradition in Ireland, and I lead a trip every summer. This year will be the first week in August, to England to be among some gorgeous ancient trees in the English countryside and some ancient stone sites. People know Stonehenge, for instance. And it was my first time in the English countryside. She had been before. She's much more experienced there than I am. But I was surprised. I told her, and she didn't quite get what I was saying, I think because she's seen it before for years, and it was new to my eyes. But, oh, my God, it's so developed. There is so little woodland there. I even went to the ancient Kingly Vale yew tree forest, where there are trees that are literally 1,000 and 2,000 years old, these ancient sacred yew trees. So they've been preserved. It's wonderful. But it's a relatively small forest, of course, coming from America, where there's so much protected land.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's precious, and I'm glad we protect it, and we can continue to preserve, and more and more and more. Unlike, as a political person, I'd say, the current administration, which doesn't value the forest that we have. But England it's an older country with a larger population, I guess I would say, and they've cut down an awful lot of forest. Eye-opening would be a gentle way of saying it. I was very surprised.
Well, and that's kind of the thing about Point Reyes, and not to get into that very much at all, but if you were to let the cattle go nuts, there would be no trees, and it would just be a big rolling grasslands right to the ocean, but it's not. And you can see them side by side. You can see what the cattle are doing, and you can see what the cattle aren't doing. And if you go to Scotland, you can see what happens if you let that go, if that's what you want.
Karen and I were standing at Drake's Estero, if you know where that is, kind of the entrance to it, where you can, there's a path that leads in from the road. This is at Point Reyes National Seashore, near where we're sitting right now in Petaluma in the radio station. And we were marking at the beautiful surroundings we were in. So it's scrubland with coyote brush, and I don't know all the native plants there, but a mix of plants, some trees. It's coastal, so there's not a lot of trees, but there's forest in the distance and the Estero in the distance. And then just adjacent to us, 100 yards to the south, it would be, as we're standing looking west to the ocean, there were some cattle. It was actually an area where there was some cattle grazing right near where we were, in this area where there were not cattle. And it was so dramatic. We remarked on it. This was just about 3 months ago. So in the winter here, where there's more rain and more greenery, But it was this relatively pristine landscape, the National Park at Point Reyes, and then the cattle, and they were in the area that had been, because of their weight and their volume, the number of animals there, and there aren't that many there. It's not a CAFO, a concentrated operation, CAFO, but they had trampled the ground down. It was just mud. It was like, oh, my God, well, there it is. There's the difference right there.
Well,
these big animals on the land.
They're big, round-hoofed animals. Right. They weigh 14. Let me give you a couple just real quick facts.
And just, you're going to go. My last thing is, so why are they there? Must they be there? Is this absolutely necessary? If it is, then it is. But I kept saying, this is like a luxury item to have these cattle here and to be doing it so that we can eat them? Like, what the hell is this? I'd rather have this natural area because there's not that much of it.
Well, you would, but a lot of people are making money, and they're there because they've been there. And just to really, because we're gonna do a couple shows. In fact, there's a guy named Dave Osborne. I want to mention his name. Hopefully you're listening, Dave, who's a rancher out there. And we want to get into the facts, okay, because there's actually misleading statements being made on both sides. But I will give you some facts, and if they're not true, then I'll go back and retract those. But the basic thing is, there's a tule elk situation happening where the tule elk, they want to control them, which means to kill them or relocate them. And they were allowed to die of thirst.
Because ranchers say the tule elk are encroaching on their ranch land.
They kept them away from water when there was a drought in 2016, and a huge amount of them died. Now, if you can imagine dying of thirst, now that's in itself a cruel thing. A lot of the tule elk were kept fenced away from the water while the cattle drank. There's about 6,000 head of cattle there. The cattle weigh the large cattle are 1,400 pounds average for the full-grown cow, and the tule elk's about 400 pounds. They have a forked hoof. The elk and the deer have a forked hoof, which doesn't tear into and smash and pulverize things the way the cattle do. The cattle tend to congregate in one area. They're not native, and the excrement alone from the cattle just on the seashore, just in the national park, cattle is 133 million tons of excrement per year. 133.
And where does that go?
It goes out into the Drake's Estero. Goes out into those places where the sea lions.
So the streams and that into the ocean. Untreated sewage.
Right. This is untreated sewage. Yeah. And that's a huge factor. So again, old way, new way. There's a lot of value. If you go into the areas where there isn't cattle, you can see the wonderful way nature's come back. So, and we're going to get into that in a minute. This is a good segue. If you just tuned in, you're listening to KPCA LP in Petaluma, California. We have Jack Gescheidt with us, and the show is called Food is Energy. We're going to get down to the facts here. We've got them listed all the way up to the letter P, and so that's going to take us a while, and we're going to let Jack go through those one by one. So, Jack, here's my question to you. What is the biggest threat to humanity right now? I love that. I knew you would get it. It's going to throw you for a loop.
Not at all. I'm like, yeah, I can answer a question.
It's
right
in your wheelhouse, Jack.
It is. It's a part of the talk I give. The number one threat, in my humble opinion, and a somewhat educated, informed opinion, facing humanity is no longer thermonuclear war, although that still exists, of course. It is, in fact, anthropogenic climate change, human-caused global warming. What we humans do in putting greenhouse gases, also known as GHGs in the biz, into the atmosphere in excess and creating a greenhouse and heating the planet. And I much prefer the term global warming because the problem is global, and it's not a change, it's a warming change. It's a warming trend on average. So that's why you can have a very, very cold Midwest blast of air right now from the Arctic. But overall, the temperature still around the planet is rising and dramatically compared to what it's been the last few hundred years. And it correlates with Industrial Revolution and more greenhouse gases being pumped in the atmosphere. And this is the last thing. 97% of the world's climate scientists are in consensus about this. Anyone who argues it is either working for fossil fuel or has been watching too much Fox News, where they only present one opinion of it, and It's not a debate anymore. I don't think we need to spend much time on that.
Yeah, and that's what I was just going to say is let's take, just for the sake of the show and time, let's take that as a given that it is man-caused.
Thank you.
Okay.
Please.
And we could do a separate show if that's a problem.
It's like saying that there's no conclusive proof that smoking causes cancer. If you believe that, it's a disinformation campaign.
Everything from this point on is based on the assumption that it is human-caused. Okay, so
it's a scientifically valid consensus as there can be in science.
Okay, and I'm never going to use climate change. I'm crossing it out right now. Global warming. Okay, great. Global warming.
I'm not sure when we shifted, but my guess is it was a euphemism.
I actually got sucked into using climate change because I thought that was the one thing, you know,
it's like saying warming trend. You can say warming trend, but like, let's call it what it is.
No, global warming.
Right. Want to address a problem, you first acknowledge there is a problem and use language that indicates the problem.
Yeah, global warming is the problem. Okay, so.
Next question, I bet, are you going to ask what's the number one causes?
Well,
of this first biggest problem in the world? Am I jumping ahead?
You stole my thunder.
Yeah.
No, well, you knew it was coming because I've got them all itemized here. Below is an itemized list. Well, actually, the next step is animal agriculture because I think, in other words, of global warming, the biggest cause of global warming, right?
So we assume. I'd say there's a midway step. So if you were to ask me hypothetically, I feel like Groucho Marx.
What is the biggest cause of global warming?
Hey, Jack, what's the biggest cause of global warming?
Yeah.
I would say, well, it's human-caused greenhouse gases.
Okay.
And then you might ask, hey, Jack, what's the biggest cause of greenhouse gases? You don't speak like that, by the way. That was just the first voice that came to me. I would say there's a good question for the audience. If you're listening, do you know what is the human activity that causes the largest amount of greenhouse gases?
The biggest cause.
Right, because some people would think, well, it's maybe energy production, you know, power plants, which is a large generator of greenhouse gases, or maybe all the world's cars, planes, trucks, automobiles, ships, et cetera, which is known as the transportation sector in this discussion. And those things are also large percentages, and their transportation, I think, is 14%, and I forget what it is for energy production. But to the point, the largest generator is not deforestation, too, is about 18% of global greenhouse gases, deforestation globally.
18%.
But the larger picture is what is the industry that is responsible for the most greenhouse gases, which, by the way, it's an industry that includes a massive amount of deforestation.
In itself.
This industry, which we're going to get to, the reveal will be this industry. This industry is responsible for over 90% of rainforest deforestation, rainforest destruction, which is, in case that's not obvious at this point, rainforests are crucial to the health of this planet.
So you're going to identify the number one cause.
The number one industry responsible for the largest amount of greenhouse gases, which cause, in largest part, global warming. And that industry is, drum roll,
I was just going to do that.
Animal factories. People call it animal ag or animal agriculture. I much prefer the term also, language being important, animal factories.
Okay, but
because they are
factory
factories.
Could be an outdoor operation too, though, right? It's not just an indoor factory kind of thing.
Yeah, correct. Factories can be in or out there. I'd say they
call them CAFOs, concentrated animal factory.
Feeding operation.
Factories and feeding operation. Okay, right. So we got about 8 minutes, and what we're going to do, this is going to set up a, Jack, no, listen, because I want to have plenty of time at the end so we can talk about how people can get a hold of you and not be all rushed at the end. So, and these all we could do a show on every one of these, but I'm going to just run through the list. And then you can walk through the list if you want right after. Let's try it that way. We didn't talk about this, but okay. So here we go. Question number 9. Below is an itemized list of the impacts of animal agriculture or CAFOs in the way you said. Okay, A, open sewage. Okay, cattle in the U.S. Okay, and I want to preface this too by saying that you and I, Jack and myself, we're going to claim this. And anybody can come on the show and dispute us, and we're going to answer for these facts, put our names on these statements from here on out until somebody proves us wrong.
Depends on what the facts are. Go for it.
These are facts, Jack. Well, you don't have to sign on if you don't want to.
I don't know what they are.
Well, you can comment on these.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to go through them really quick. Open sewage, cattle in the U.S. are, the open sewage from cattle alone in the U.S. is equivalent to 35 billion with a B humans. So the human excrement would be 35 billion humans. That's how much cattle puts out in the U.S. as open, untreated sewage. B, deforestation. Jack's going to agree with that. C, carbon footprint of transportation. D, methane emissions from the animals themselves. E, land use compared to plants. F, as in Frank, antibiotics in the meat. That's what you consume if you consume meat. Pesticides in the meat, that's what you consume. Refrigeration and storage, those are carbon footprints things that are separate from the transportation. It's an external cost that the meat has to be refrigerated and stored. Erosion, You know, we talked about the hooves in Point Reyes and how they stomp everything, and when it gets wet, they just crush everything.
I would call deforestation a brutal sort of erosion.
You're right. Nothing can grow there. Nothing can grow there.
Except GMO corn and GMO soy.
Well, when the cattle stomp it down, it just becomes pulverized.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, there are people that also talk about sustainable and, you know, that cattle can actually contribute to healthy soil. And kind of setting that aside, I would say, not in the concentrated operation.
Right.
So even people that do that say, well, we don't want to do it that way. We do smaller herds and rotate them. And I say, that's fine, but that's not scalable to produce the amount of meat we're currently eating in this country.
Not even close. And the thing is, you're talking about maybe one cow per acre or something. The numbers are incredibly light. And the thing about it is why would you do that? And the whole reason they're even caring about it is because they're making money on the cattle. If they're not environmentalists. They're trying to create an environmental model to do what they do, which is an economic thing. It's a commodity.
Right.
So let's move on.
Beef production, by the way, uses 60% of the Earth's agricultural land and provides only 2% of the world's calories.
I knew you'd have a comment for that, Jack, and that's great. Species instinct. I'm gonna run through these, and you can go back. Species extinction, which we've seen at Point Reyes, and it happens everywhere where there's non-native species. Again, and you don't like that word, non-native. But anyway,
you know, scientifically meaningless, but it's a fun word.
But the cattle aren't from here. Let's just say that. They're from Africa, and they're a completely altered. There's no such thing as a cow. They were genetically altered, if you would say, by animal husbandry.
Well, what we humans have done, besides cut down half of the world's forests, one of our greatest impacts. The other impact is turning we are very rapidly turning all of the world's wild animals into domesticated animals for our consumption.
Or killing them off completely.
Or wiping them out. If they threaten the cattle operation, we'll kill all the wolves. Kill all the bear.
Every animal you see out in the wild, I mean, out in the, let's say, in the fields, is there for someone to make money on, or it's not there. Period.
Will we leave just time, about, after this list of happy carnage, Ray, will we leave time to tell the average person what they can do so they can actually
That's a really important. Okay, so let's just, we won't be able to comment on these, but let me finish this list real quick. Species extinction are tax subsidies. That's a drawback. Human-animal contact diseases like the avian flu and the swine flu, E. coli outbreaks that happen in plants and people think it's from the vegetables and it's not. It's from animal fertilizers. And then the animal suffering, which, again, that's a huge thing, but that's on here too. And then human health, people getting sick from eating the meat, chronic lifestyle diseases. Now, you're right. We've got about 5 minutes. So that's all the bad news, and we'll do a show and go into that.
We'll call it bad news, the bad news show. Tune in, everyone.
No. The bad. Well, you gotta. You can't just everything all fluffy and everything. You gotta expose what's really the problem, and now the solution, Jack. What do you say? Is it just about trees now, or what can we all do? What can the people that are listening, that are glued to the radio right now, they're glued to the speaker, to hear what you have to say about the positive things that you can do? Anybody. To solve this problem?
Well, I can come at that a few ways. I would say the number one thing you can do is be willing to be a little bit more educated. A little bit of information goes a long way. If you know, for instance, if you learn that consuming the amount of meat that we folks do is really doing tremendous harm to the environment, not helping our health, to put it mildly, and is terribly cruel, then you'll be open to saying, okay, you know, I don't need to eat a fast food burger tonight. I'll have some pilaf or vegetables or rice or beans or whatever. There's so many ways. And the good news about that is instead of, as we should be also doing, pressing politically on large corporations to change their behavior, instead I can take action which will immediately have a positive effect on the environment, on my health, and be nicer to animals, which I do care about. No one is advocating being cruel to animals. It's just the industry hiding it from us that puts us in the position of actually doing this harm. So what you eat today, tonight for dinner, tomorrow for breakfast, lunch, and dinner can make a tremendous difference in all of these areas. And you can feel good about yourself as well as literally feel better.
Okay.
And you don't even have to, as I like to say, go 100% vegan.
No,
you can just reduce meat consumption.
Absolutely. No one's saying that. I don't think that's realistic. We're not saying make a complete U-turn here.
Right.
What I'm saying is you definitely have the power. You mentioned trying to put pressure on corporations. Well, there's only one way to do that, not buy the product. So what I'm saying
there's many ways to do it, actually.
Well,
to be precise, I think protests and all that stuff is powerful, too.
You find your way. I'm not against that, but that stuff is, It's like trying to get a law passed in the Capitol. I mean, how much time does
that
take?
Thank God there are people doing that, though. Right? Not for you or me, but it's important work to do, so I don't want to put it down.
I admire them. They're better people than me because I got stuff to do. And, you know, but the thing is, all I want to know is that am I a part of the problem by financing something that I'm myself against? And that's what this show is about. We're coming back around to food is energy and what this is about. And as far as I'm concerned, if you have a choice, and you say, well, I don't have any power. Well, if you've got $10 in your pocket and you're at the store and you are looking at some dairy cheese and you're looking at some non-dairy cheese, okay, that's where the magic happens. You can buy non-dairy cheese for about the same price, and a lot of the good things that are about cheese are there, the fat and the wonderful, satisfying richness, and you put it on your cracker, and you're happy, and there are so many good things that happen when you make that decision. You are now part of the solution as opposed to being part of the problem.
We are in a consumer society, so deciding whether that's good or bad is a separate discussion, but we are in a consumer society. That's the reality. We have tremendous power as consumers.
Exactly. So if you were to just change the products that you buy, maybe it's a chocolate bar. We've done some shows on chocolate. Some chocolate bars have wrappers that totally break down in the compost pile within a month, and they've done this on purpose. They've done some serious research, and it's about the same price as another chocolate bar that has a tin foil wrapper that ends up in the landfill that doesn't break down. Those type of things. Think about that, and if you're willing to do that, you're doing a great thing, and there'll be more good things will happen in the future.
And three parting words: eat less meat. You don't even have to travel off planet, far away from Earth and the reality here, to the fifth brightest star in the sky, Vega, to become a vegan. You can just eat less meat. If the average American who consumes 2 to 3 servings of meat and or dairy per day were just to convert to 2 or 3 servings of that yummy meat and dairy you're used to eating a week, that would cut your consumption 85% and all the concomitant effects of pollution and greenhouse gases and a horrific cruelty to animals that nobody is for.
And
just reduce consumption.
I would even go another step and say something that has raised the ire of the environmentalists. And I'm saying that if you are an environmentalist and you don't embrace the plant-based lifestyle as far as acknowledging it for what it is and tipping your hat to a vegan, even if you're not, in my mind, then you're not an environmentalist. Because show me why that's not a fact. If you are an environmentalist, you should start from a vegan base. And if you want to use meat, go ahead. But it's not with your message. It's against your message. There's no way that you can eat meat of any kind and call that an environmental message. It's just not. The non-meat version is going to be better.
There's a famous and to some infamous rancher named Howard Lyman.
Right.
I think he was the one who was on Oprah.
Yeah.
And he's famous for quitting the business, getting educated, and now he's a plant-based
advocate. He's got a
advocate.
Name. They call him something, too. He's got a funny name.
They have a nickname for him, but it's Howard Lyman. But he's the one that said something to that effect. And I'm misquoting this, not verbatim, but it was, call yourself what you want, but you can't simultaneously be an environmentalist and eat meat.
Right, exactly. He's a former rancher. Right. So there's a guy that, you know, has a lot of credibility in my mind. So at least tip your hat to a vegan. Don't feel bad. I would never say to someone to feel super guilty or bad and shame them for using meat products. What I'm saying is, let's look at the facts, and if you do avoid an animal product at even just one meal, you're helping. That's great. You're helping a lot. And we totally tip our hats to you, you know, as vegans, because, hey, yeah, we reached the threshold as vegans, right? We're not perfect. There's still harm being done to the world. We're not saying that we're on this higher moral ground. You know, what we're saying is we've reached a threshold, and we want to open up that gate for other people because there's good things for you down the horizon.
Today, this very day.
It still sounds like a vegan infomercial, but the bottom line is some really good things are
happening. Here at Vegan World, we're here to help love you and help you love yourself.
Vegan nirvana. Everything's great once you become vegan. Well, the things taste better. I mean, I guess it's something.
Ray has better sex because he's vegan.
Yeah.
His breath smells better. Right now I'm smelling his breath, and it smells yummy good.
Jack.
Sorry, old ad guy.
Can I do a plug for True Spirit Project?
Yeah. In fact, we've got a couple minutes. How can people get a hold of you, and how can they support True Spirit Project, Jack?
Thank you, Ray. I'm currently fundraising for a first book of True Spirit Project photographs I've made over the last decade, and that's photographs of people vulnerably communing with trees to dramatically illustrate our connection, our interdependence with the world's trees and forests. My website is treespiritproject.com. And just if the information and the conversation on this show interests you and you'd like to know more about any of these topics we discussed, every one of them is on my website, some with a lot of information. There's an About top menu, and on that there's a page on climate change. There's a page, there's a page on global warming. I think I call it climate change just because that search is better. Yeah, there you go. The words matter. There's one on deforestation. There's one on what trees do. I lead trips as well for people who are real, like me, unabashed and devout tree huggers who want to be with fellow tree huggers and have a lovely experience in the forest, away from people, really connecting with trees. And as I mentioned before, my shaman partner, Kara, of Heartland Healing Arts, and I lead a trip to England called Sacred Trees and Ancient Sites of England. That's also on an events page on the website. But all of it is at treespiritproject.com, and you can purchase a book in advance to support my fundraising for the first ever book of photographs. Thank you, Ray.
That's great. I think you did that and got it into a good amount of time. So let's we're going to cue. And I'll say one more thing. If you want to win the Super Bowl, you better be vegan. Get a quarterback that's vegan anyway. KPCA LP in Petaluma, California. Thank you very much for listening.